I can hear you, Colin Peacock.
No, it's just thinking because if you were going to ask me that, it's unfortunately the songs that I remember my sister torturing me with, like the Osmonds and bloody Baker Street and ABBA
Baker
and stuff
Street,
like that.
Right.
And I didn't like it, but one that I know did make a mark on me as a kid was, I can't even recall who sang it, but that song about the horse with no name. Do you know that one? You know, after 3 days in the desert sun.
Yeah.
That
is it
one.
America?
Ah, it was. That's it. I was going to look it up, but I thought I wouldn't cheat and try and see if I could remember it. Because as a kid, I thought it was a Neil Young song, because the guy had a high-pitched voice that sounded a bit like Neil Young. But yeah, as a really little kid, that one would have been playing over and over again on Radio Windy or something like that.
Oh, Windy, of course. That was a great station, Windy, wasn't it?
Well, all I remember is they played a lot of songs, or all the Wellington stations did then. They played a small number of songs on a high rotate all the time, so you heard them a hell of a lot. But that one I found as a kind of a mysterious story. There was something about it. Wasn't quite like other songs, so I suppose that was just about the earliest one I could remember that I'd sit there and listen to all the way through, because I thought it was an interesting little story.
Okay, Midweek Media Watch. It's less mysterious, more of an open book if you're an influencer, isn't it?
Well, not entirely, because we never know what they're up to and what their motivations are. But yeah, the Herald on Sunday. Well, yeah, obviously it's money. But this is the thing, when they're recruited and they're posting this stuff, you never know whether this is a sincere attachment to the thing they're endorsing or not. They should
Don't
mark
you?
Them as ads. Well, you know, like in the case of the Herald on Sunday, this is the paper in the weekend. Their whole front page was about one council-controlled organisation in Auckland spending $12,000 on this campaign, which involved that amount of money going to these social media influencers. And it was Auckland Transport that had spent it. And I have to say, I'm not familiar with former reality TV star Vianney Bright or MyFM presenter Lily Toto, who were two that were named as being paid between $1,500 and $2,500 bucks for their part in this campaign.
Saying I catch the bus or something?
Yeah, posting pictures of them with their little hop card and going to the bus. Now, they may be enthusiastic users of public transport. I don't know, but I don't suppose it matters that much. But interestingly, Alice Peacock, who's no relation to me, wrote the story and had to do a little explainer on what influencing actually is, because I guess there'd be people buying the paper that didn't really know. She described it as a constant stream of ads disguised as real life, otherwise known as influencing. And those with the most followers make a living from their posts, and more primary school children now want to be influencers than doctors, scientists or artists, according to a survey from London backed by the OECD. So that's pretty distressing stuff, but a nice little summary of it. But the story was on the front page and page two of the paper, because some councils are saying, look, this is a waste of money. Auckland Transport has real issues with provision of the nuts and bolts and bus services and all this fancy stuff of employing trendy young people and paying them too much money to just post pictures on their social media. They thought was a waste of money. But, you know, the whole point of this is that, as Alice pointed out in her piece, this is a pretty standard element of digital advertising campaigns now, because these people reach people that other advertisers don't. So the fact that I don't even know who those influencers are means that if there are kids who think the bus is uncool, or the loser cruiser, or whatever they used to call it, if they can reach them with a
the
message,
loser cruiser.
Well, I think that's what people used to call it. You know, that was not the cool way to go. The losers are on the bus, and the cooler kids, riding around in cars. So anyway, if it works, that's fine. And like I say, it is now embedded in modern advertising practice.
You know, we were talking before the show about, she's not a Kardashian, she's a Jenner. She's attached to the Kardashians. Kendall Jenner on that festival in the Bahamas that didn't happen, the Fyre Festival.
Yeah.
She got paid $250,000 to put a post up on Instagram that she was going.
Yeah, but that's a purely commercial thing. So I guess the fact that it's AT, an Auckland Council enterprise, that's paying the money is what put it on the front page of the paper. But the thing is, this really triggered Mike Hosking on News Talk ZB in the Herald. He wrote a piece there, foaming away, these people are clowns at Auckland Transport, get them out. He said, here's my top tip, find the councillor or mayoral candidate that's going to stop this and vote for them. John Tamahiti, as a candidate, has really targeted Auckland Transport. He's worked out that disgruntled Auckland Aucklanders who don't like what's happening on the streets might be a fertile ground for appealing and gaining votes. So I think the real story here is not that a pretty modest sum was spent on this new form of advertising, which upset some councillors and perhaps some newspaper readers. It's the fact that Auckland Transport is a political football in the upcoming Auckland local elections.
Fair enough, but they're not the only influencers about, are they? You're also talking about lobbyists?
Yep, that's right, and well, PR people as well. And interesting on the Newsroom co-site, Newsroom website, that the former Herald editor Tim Murphy edits, he picked on an article he saw in his former paper, The Herald, which struck him as odd. It was about the Auckland PR professional, very high-profile person in that business, Deborah Peed, who has her own company, and a story all about her company and how three managers were going to be shareholders in it going into the future, and this would be their new structure, and a sort of posy picture of all four of them together. And Tim said, look, this sort of thing happens in small businesses all the time. Person who set it up and heads it wants to move on or make succession plans. The people in it will keep it going. They make them partners. Big deal. Why is this news? And I think that's a good point. But he made a big deal of the fact that once this story went up on the Herald online, got retweeted, and a host of media people then retweeted their fulsome congratulations to Deborah Peed for this milestone that she'd hit in her business. It was Jesse Mulligan, Rawdon Christie, Nadine Higgins, columnist and broadcast, also Russell Brown, her former host of Media Watch, indeed, who were all congratulating her very much. And Tim Murphy's conclusion was, look, anyone's free to write whatever story they want, they can tweet what they like, but the circular media report to social media posting to media influencer endorsement all seems a bit in-house, and I think you might be right about that.
No comment.
Well, I don't know, you probably, maybe it's a Wellington, Auckland type of thing. It's such an Auckland business. But it's funny, though, that I found a video where Tim Murphy, Jesse Mulligan and Deborah Peed, three people who've all featured in Tim Murphy's own story, all appeared together talking about the nature of PR. This was at a Massey University event where the whole thing was filmed and put on YouTube. And Deborah Peed gives a pretty fascinating talk in that. Here's a clip, actually, where she's talking about the importance of these third-party endorsers.
It's about that planning for a desired outcome, putting together a strategy to achieve the plan, evaluating the risks, challenging those risks, knowing the right channels to use, assembling your troops to help you tell the story, developing the material. Securing those third-party endorsers are so important, and then driving the message.
Well, Deborah Peed, of course, very well known, and all of those people would have worked with her.
Well, I guess they would have, but as she goes on, she talks about things that she's worked on, ambushing press conferences, getting One News to play along, you know, crashed with Jack Nicklaus, the golfer, when he was visiting and so on. She also talks about one that went wrong, which was when Mike King was the ambassador for New Zealand pork. And they were clients of Deborah Peed's, and of course he had a complete conversion, hooked up with the animal rights activists and exposed conditions in pig farms that actually led to a change in animal welfare. And she talks pretty frankly about that. It's pretty interesting, and if you want to see it, the video is embedded in the Media Watch page for this week's Media Watch midweek, so have a look at the Media Watch page on the RNZ website for that. But wrapping up that talk, Jesse Mulligan was the MC for it, and what he did at the end is he put up a story which was about Nadia Lim, the MasterChef contestant turned My Food Bag entrepreneur. She had cut herself with a knife, and that somehow turned into a news story about her having this unfortunate injury. So put up a picture of that on the screen. And then he made this joke about this exposure for one of Deborah Peed's clients.
Thanks, Deborah. Yes, it's a testament to Deborah's influence that when a spokesperson cuts her own thumb off with a knife, the media asks if Deborah instructed her to do it. Very good.
Oh, dear.
I know. I mean, it's just a joke, obviously, but I mean, it's interesting to hear the influence that people are sort of happy to say that she has on these media personalities. And Tim Murphy was also at that event because at the time he'd newly formed his own media consultancy, which later became the Newsroom Enterprise. So now he's into journalism and not involved in that sort of PR side of things at all. But I mean, to me, I guess I'm a bit old fashioned and not in that circuit that some of these people operate in, but I think the pull of that sort of PR power is something to be resisted by news media people and not endorsed. I mean, on Deborah Peed's company website, it says We Boost Brands. And I think, you know, that's their job, and it's not a joint venture with people like that to get things on the news. And I think it's better if, you know, media people kind of represent the audience and not necessarily what, you know, those who want to expose things in the media as part of their, you know, their business model want to get up to.
It depends, I suppose, whether you're working in a commercial operation or not, or whether you operate in that way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, here we are as a publicly funded organisation, and I don't have to hustle for ads or anything like that to make my program and get it broadcast. So that, I suppose, is a difference. But the point to me is that the audience is hardly ever let in on how this influence really works. But a really great exception to that was a piece by Greg Bruce, which was actually a profile, the Herald writer Greg Bruce, a profile of Deborah Peed a couple of years back called Is This Auckland's Most Influential Woman? And there's a link to that on the Midweek Media Watch page if you want to read it. It's a great piece. He lists all the things he was offered by PR companies just in the week previous, not just Deborah Peed's, but several of them. So this is pretty routine, these things being offered to Auckland journalists and journalists elsewhere, I guess, in the course of their work. And then she talks about interviewing Deborah Peed for this big feature in the glossy weekend newspaper magazine, and saying she didn't offer him anything at all. And then he writes about getting a phone call from her a little later where she says, look, there's a great opportunity, I think you're perfect for it. And this involves having a fancy suit made and a trip to Paris. And he writes quite openly about how his thoughts just go completely wild at the thought of this fantastic gift. But the final line in Greg's story, which, you know, really is a rarity for showing, you know, sometimes how these interactions work that we, the audience, never get to find out about. The final line is really a killer. He says, the deadline for the story you are now reading was still a few days away. So time for that little offer to sink in and perhaps influence what he might write about the potentially most influential woman in Auckland.
Oh, that's incredible, isn't it?
That's a great piece.
I thought that sort of stuff happened in the 80s and it was all over and done with, but obviously it's still rife in certain circles, as you say.
Well, I guess so, but it's a big industry. There's lots of advertising, and of course we know, I mean, press conferences, all sorts of events, even at non-commercial RNZ, you know, there's writers' festivals and so on, publishers who want their books exposed. There's even a non-commercial media, the hand of public relations and influencing of that nature influences the content even when it's not commercial media. So, I mean, nothing's entirely pure, but yeah, I would like to see, I think at some points, you know, greater distance between media people and the people who are there basically to boost brands.
Well, if you look at somebody like Jesse Mulligan, though, he has a foot in both camps, doesn't he?
Yeah, but I would say that makes it all the more important that, you know, if you're like, I have no idea what his relationship might be with Deborah Peed or any other PR company, or what he might have been offered or taken or accepted or rejected. No idea at all. But the point is, to me, we don't know. Their job is boosting brands. Media people's job is being on the side of the audience. And that's where I think it ought to lie.
And Colin, what about lobbyists and spin doctors? Do we have a lot of those in New Zealand?
Plenty.
Do we?
Yeah, we do. And there was a really interesting story, Newsroom, again, Laura Walters, one of their political reporters, wrote about the links between a professional lobbyist and the Prime Minister. This is Gordon John Thompson of the Thompson Lewis lobbying firm. Now, a while back, he quit that role to become Jacinda Ardern's chief of staff for a short time when she was just setting up in government, and then he returned to his lobbying firm. But Laura writes that one of his clients of this firm is Huawei, who of course absolutely want to build the 5G network, involved in, you know, diplomatic wrangles that have been quite serious for the country. And she says in her piece, look, there are legitimate conflict of interest concerns, and also cites other public relations and lobbying firms who think that this is something that there should be more transparency over. But Bill Ralston in The Latest Listener, in his weekly column, absolutely rubbishes the piece and others actually about lobbyists and their relationship with politics and politicians. I mean, it's annoying because in the piece he doesn't actually name the articles like Laura Walters' one that he's actually talking about. So readers can't go and look for this themselves. But, you know, he says, you know, the article, Laura Walters' one, ended by opining on the question of transparency to avoid unwanted accusations of corruption, which in my opinion, says Bill Ralston, is a brave if somewhat dangerous foray into the territory of potential defamation, and said that stories in other media were similar if less brash than that Newsroom piece. But I mean, you know, this is a guy who was a former news editor at TVNZ, a long-time political editor. I mean, defamation, just to raise the question of whether there might be conflicts of interests and, you know, the potential for perceptions of corruption. We're nowhere near defamation, and I think that's pretty weak.
Why do you think he's doing that?
Well, that's the thing. He winds up his piece by saying, in my experience of covering Parliament, the inhabitants of the Beehive have very well-developed bullshit detectors, and they're acutely aware of the terminal effect in the polls if they're caught doing backroom dealings. So he's saying, look, trust us, the politicians aren't stupid. But the thing is, Bill Ralston's experience of covering Parliament ended many, many years ago. And since then, for many years, he's been a spin doctor, a lobbyist for hire, one of the people that he's actually writing about. That isn't mentioned in the article. I don't know how many listener readers really know it. He's done media training for prime ministers and so on, and not openly declared that because the clients wouldn't want it, even though plenty of other people have referred to it in the media, and it's not exactly a secret. So, I mean, for him to say, you know, governments know, they're not going to be twisted around their little finger by these spin doctors and lobbyists and give them exactly what they want because they'd be punished at the polls. Well, I mean, this is the thing. We don't know. We don't know who their clients are. We didn't know about Gordon John Thompson and Huawei. Is it relevant? Is it, I don't know. Is it serious? But that's the thing. We don't know. And for him to write as basically someone who's in the lobbying and media advice business in these terms, I don't find very convincing at all.
Where are we going to now?
Well, one final influencer that I do think actually does
a good job?
Yeah, well, he's done a good thing, potentially. This is the Egyptian footballer Mo Salah. So yeah. Liverpool won the European Cup in the weekend, beating Tottenham in Madrid. He's been their star player the last couple of years and, you know, the standout African footballer in world football. And he was recently named by Time magazine as one of the top 100 most influential people in the world. And John Oliver, the comedian, wrote the profile of him where he said, Mo Salah is a better human being than he is a football player, and he's one of the best football players in the world. And I thought it was a bit over the top that a footballer would be one of the 100 most influential people in the world. But this week there was a study by a Stanford University Immigration Policy Lab, it's called, and it suggested they looked at social media and media coverage, and they reckon that his arrival at Liverpool these last couple of years has actually seen a noticeable fall in Islamophobia and expressions on social media, and also in recorded racially motivated crime in the city. So just his presence and his popularity as a visible Muslim guy seems to have had an influence, if the study is all correct.
That's good news.
And in the video that's with it, the Time magazine profile of him by John Oliver, you can click on that. That's on the Midweek Media Watch page too. There's a link to the whole piece. He speaks in a way that sports people often don't. He's saying, I would like to see attitudes to women change in my country, meaning Egypt. And as a guy living outside of the country, where it's probably very controversial to be saying that, as someone living a privileged lifestyle outside of the country, quite a brave and interesting thing to do. So yeah, possibly this is a case of an influencer who is perhaps living up to that thing we often hear about sports people being role models and so on, and he's actually doing it in a positive way, it seems.
Using their fame and talent to good use.
Indeed.
Very good, Colin. Well, thank you very much. And we can find those stories and more, can't we, on the Midweek Media Watch, or you've actually got the Media Watch page, haven't you?
That's
right.
Do you
have a separate Midweek Media Watch page?
Yeah, it's on the Media Watch page of the RNZ website. It'll just be the last item there, and all the Media Watch stuff from days and weeks gone by will be piled up behind it, but that'll be at the top there. And also have a look at that, because good story about a Gloria Vale piece from the Herald that was ripped off by that horrible rip-off machine, the Daily Mail Online in Australia, and poor old Anke Richter, the author of it, trying to find out whether there's any chance of getting them to acknowledge that they ripped it off and possibly even pay for it. But have a look, you'll find out that will be an uphill battle based on previous experience of that terrible media outlet stealing other people's journalism and getting away with it.
Well, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sure thing, I'll be back.
All right, thank you, Colin.
Cheers.
That's Colin Peacock.